Welcome to Boston Confidential, Beantown's true crime podcast. Boston is a great city, but there's more to it than the Freedom Trail and Fenway Park. There's a startling underbelly to the city, and Boston Confidential will take you on a guided tour of the hub of the universe, Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Boston Confidential. My name's Barry McGuire, and I'm your host. I'm a 20-year private investigator on the streets of Boston, and I help run a company called Impact Due Diligence Investigations. If you need anything in terms of investigative services, feel free to contact me at Impact. If I can't help you personally, I'll certainly direct you to the right person or agency. All right, guys, let's get to it. Hi, guys. Welcome back to Boston Confidential. Big response from our last episode on the Karen Reed case. Man, that's a tough one to wrap your head around. A lot of moving parts. Guys, before I go any further, do me a favor and visit our relatively new store for some Boston Confidential merchandise. The website is bostonconfidentialgear.com. That's bostonconfidentialgear.com. We have just gotten some new short sleeve t-shirts in, and the tumbler, the 16-ounce tumbler, seems to be our biggest seller, but we have hoodies, long sleeve tees, and some quarter zips. It's still a little chilly out there. Now get your ass over to the store. Guys, there is an update on a case we had previously covered, the Colleen Ritzer case, which happened in 2014. Philip Chisholm, who was 14 at the time of this homicide. And if you remember, Colleen Ritzer was an algebra teacher and was teaching Philip Chisholm. And man, he murdered her in the most brutal fashion there was. And he did things to the body. I'm not going to get into them here. Go back and listen to our episode on it. Just scroll through the menu. I think it's probably about halfway down. And it's probably one of the most disturbing cases we've ever covered here on Boston Confidential. Colleen Ritzer was a glowing light in our world, and this guy snuffed her out like she was nothing. But yes, he'd already been sentenced to 40 years in prison for that homicide, that brutal, nasty rape and homicide. He was sentenced to 40 years as some type of youthful offender in 2016. So he's due to get out in 2056, but I'd shave off at least 10 years of this guy's sentence because it's Massachusetts. So he's going to get out at a relatively young age. He pled guilty just this week to a similar attempted homicide on a female staff member of the Department of Youth Services, basically youth jail guards. This woman was supervising Philip Chisholm and some other inmates, and she had to go use the ladies' room. Philip Chisholm tried to follow her in there, and he did. As she came out of the ladies' room, he began strangling her so badly that she couldn't scream. Eventually, she fought her way to get the hand off of her neck, and she screamed, and help came. But she was minutes from passing out and dying. He would have killed her. And as they pulled Philip Chisholm off this DYS guard, he says, I'm going to kill them. I'm going to kill them all. And I believe he just means women in that regard. This guy is a bad egg, and he's due to get back on the street sometime. And he committed this heinous act. I don't know if he was charged as a youthful offender in this instance, because if he is, it's not really worth it. You've got to put that time, this new time he just pleaded guilty to, on and after that sentence. So you keep him in the joint as long as possible. Because again, this kid's a bad seed. Now, more than that, guys, he's actually evil. He's Ted Bundy level evil. He'd love to do it again. So as far as the Karen Reed case goes, we have impaneled a jury, a full jury, including alternates. So that's ready to go. And I'm recording this on Friday, April 26th. And I believe we're going to start on Monday. Guys, the jury will be seated and sworn in. And there is some speculation that the case may be derailed through an arrest by the federal government. Don't forget, in the Karen Reed case, there's parallel investigations. One by the FBI into police and prosecutorial misconduct, and the one against Karen Reed. And I believe if they make an arrest on the federal side, especially of head homicide investigator Michael Proctor, they can't go forward on the state level. But I'm not entirely sure. The judge seems so slanted in favor of the prosecution. It's really unreal. I urge you to go watch the hearing. It's on YouTube. It's on a few different platforms. But let me know if you think the judge is favoring the prosecution in this case. It's blatant bias, in my opinion. Today, we're covering the case of Alvin Campbell out of Boston, Massachusetts. Actually, it's out of the city of Boston and the metropolitan region. And much like I said during the podcast regarding the Heath Street Gang in Roxbury, the Karen Reed seems to take all the oxygen out of the room for other cases. And that's part of what happened, I think, happened with this case of alleged serial rapist Alvin Campbell. And what I'm going to tell you guys, it's vicious. It's a nightmare. It's a woman's nightmare, but it's all alleged. He has not been convicted yet, and I'm going to tell you about it. But I think the first thing I need to tell you is he is the brother of Andrea Campbell, the Massachusetts Attorney General. She was formerly a Boston City Councilor when most of this occurred, and then she ran for Attorney General and won. She is currently the Attorney General. And during the Karen Reed case, you probably remember me calling for the Attorney General to intervene in this case. I don't think that's going to happen. That office in Massachusetts has become largely political. Previously, under like Scott Harshbarger and subsequent Attorney Generals, they were the top cop. They handled criminal cases and big ones, political corruption, police corruption, gambling rings, organized crime. It came directly from the AG's office. That seems to be harkening back to a time we're never going to see again. The whole office seems to be just blinded by political correctness and whatever else is going on in society. The exact opposite of what you need from the Attorney General. So Andrea Campbell didn't have an easy life growing up. She was the daughter of Alvin Campbell, who was described as the black godfather of Boston. And he was friends with John Martorano. And if you remember from our episodes on John Martorano, Martorano intervened in some beef that Campbell brothers were having. And the Campbell brothers controlled gambling and other organized crime activities in Mattapan and other areas of Boston. I believe they paid tribute to Martorano, John Martorano, in the Winter Hill Gang run by Whitey Bulger. But he was kind of the boss of that area, and he was in and out of the joint, and he was actually in prison when Andrea Campbell was born in 1982. And he went down on a beef for about 8 years, and he had been involved in several homicides in and out of the joint. He wasn't afraid to mix it up with his fists either. He was a tough guy. He was a gangster in the old sense of the word. And for whatever reason, they really got along with John Martorano. He liked these guys. Martorano ended up killing a guy by the name of Hicks, who was running some type of scam against the federal government in black neighborhoods of Boston, kind of acting as a social justice warrior where he'd get funding and was basically robbing the federal government. and somehow the Campbells get mixed up with this, and there was some type of beef, and Martirano killed Hicks for the Campbell brothers, and all their problems went away for a while. But he had been arrested, I believe, in the 70s for selling cocaine, and it was, I think, a mess at home for Andrea Campbell because her dad was gone. And it is said that she didn't know who her father was until he got out of the joint. You know, she was 8 years old when he got out. And at a certain point, she went to foster care and then was, you know, kind of adopted by an aunt and an uncle. She went on to the Boston Latin School, which is the best public school in Boston, has a great reputation. You have to be a smart cookie to get in, and I think Andrea Campbell was, despite her kind of rough upbringing. You know, she had that last name, Campbell, and it was big. It was big in Mattapan and Roxbury, and it must have been hard to live under that shadow of her dad. She was obviously very smart. She went from Boston Latin to Princeton, right? And then went to UCLA Law School and came back to Boston and worked for, I know I'm going to butcher this name, Prosecure Rose, LLP. And I believe that is the largest law firm in the country. And she worked in the Boston office. So after Princeton, she graduated Princeton in 04, on to law school at UCLA. These are big things. So she's on the ball, you know, and gets the big job there. And she had to have been making a ton of money. Actually, that law firm, I believe, sets the bar for what new law school graduates are going to get, you know, at big firms. So I believe she was kind of on the fast track. She handled business and contracts and some real estate stuff. By the time she left to run for the Boston City Council, I mean, she probably had to have been making $350,000 a year. They work you to death, but the money's great. Prior to running for the Boston City Council, she worked for Governor Deval Patrick in, I don't really know what capacity, but in 2015, she ran for Boston City Councilor. And my God, what a change from the law firm to this. The money, I don't know if it's even a third of what she would have made if she stayed at the big law firm or even transferred to another one. But she ran against Charles Yancey in a district that covers Dorchester, Mattapan, Jamaica Plain, and Roslindale. It's District 4. So she runs in 2015 against Charles Yancey, and he had been in Boston politics forever. And he wasn't the most well-liked guy. And I think Andrea Campbell saw an opportunity and she ended up kind of kicking his ass from what I remember and was ushered into office. She had worked her way up to become president of the city council. And at various times, she had beefs basically with the Boston Police Patrolmen's Union. And one I remember specifically, she had a beef because she supported charter schools, more charter schools in Boston, because the teachers union doesn't support that. And she got a lot of crap over that. But I was for that, you know, more charter schools, the better. And I believe that's probably the only thing we'd agree on. But she was definitely on the right side of that and did fight the teachers union on it. At a certain point, you know, she makes her decision and rolls with it, and she did. And I think there were more charter schools allowed after that. The Boston Public Schools, I went to Boston Public 30 years ago. It was horrific then, and it's worse now. So I kind of appreciated her trying to do that. The public schools have made no progress, but if I had to send my kids to school in Boston, it would either be a private school, Boston Latin, like Andrea Campbell went to, or a charter school. I'd homeschool before I sent my kids to Boston Public. So that's a hell of a start, right, for somebody who suffered some debilitating losses. when her father was in prison, right? Her mother, Andrea Campbell's mother, was going to visit Alvin Campbell in jail, and she was killed in a car accident. Can you believe that? And that's when I believe she was taken in by aunt and uncle, whom she says were like parents to her. So just a difficult upbringing, difficult area to grow up in. The city's kind of tough to grow up in, no matter what neighborhood you're from. I guess probably not Beacon Hill. If you grew up in Beacon Hill, I think you're doing okay. But in the real neighborhoods of Boston, South Boston, Charlestown, Mattapan, Dorchester, can be a tough place to grow up. And Andrea Campbell, she thrived. She went right through it all. Her brothers, on the other hand, did the opposite. Andrea Campbell is a twin, and I believe pretty quickly into his teens, 20s, he ended up in prison. And the older brother had some problems with the police, and that's who we're talking about today. Her brother, Alvin Campbell, he's the older brother, and he went through some of the same type of stuff, but man, he didn't come out on the other end like Andrea did. And I'm sure she tried to help him as much as she could, but the guy was kind of a lost cause from early on. Andrea Campbell, I know I mentioned she had rose to the city council president role, and she did that for 2 years, ending in 2020. In 2021, she ran for mayor and lost. Shortly thereafter, she runs for attorney general and wins. So Andrea Campbell, by any account, and even if you don't agree with her politically or if you do, she's an American success story, right? And she did it through education. And now she's the attorney general. But I'm afraid I'm going to have to flip the script and bring you to Alvin Campbell, who is not the American dream, but the American nightmare. One of the first things that jumped out about this case, at least to me, was Alvin Campbell's massive and felonious criminal record. And I'm just going to go over it real quick. His convictions, gun convictions, started in April of 2000. He was convicted in April of 2000, armed assault with intent to rob, an assault and battery. October 2006, felon in possession of a firearm, and he was sentenced to 4+ years on that beef. August 2014, he was sentenced to 7 years for being in possession of a firearm without a license. That must have been a plea deal. February 9, 2017, willfully videotaped a nude or partially nude victim with intent to rape. April 2017, rape. Also the videotaping charge, guys. May 21st, 2017, aggravated rape, indecent assault and battery, forcibly confining a woman. December 2017, videotaping a rape, a partially nude or nude woman, and rape. And those are just the greatest hits, guys. Alvin Campbell has been a menace to society for what? Almost 25 years now. And it's just a crazy case because he kind of jumps around a little bit. I see him alternately listed as a resident of Cumberland, Rhode Island, and Dorchester, Massachusetts. And those gun convictions, especially the subsequent gun convictions, should have kept him in jail for much, much longer than he was sentenced to. He's actually currently in the Nashua Street Jail, which is a Suffolk County's lockup, awaiting trial because he's too dangerous to be bailed. At this point, Alvin Campbell is accused in 9 rapes. Can you imagine that? And this is what Alvin Campbell's MO is. He pretends to be a rideshare driver. This is one of the modus operandi Mr. Campbell uses. So he actually was a rideshare driver for a while, and his car was festooned with all the Uber and, you know, ride-sharing stickers, so it looked legitimate. And it was, at a certain point, he was doing that job. But he'd prey on women who are too drunk to fight back or realize what's going on. And he'd videotape them, hence those charges, during these rapes and sexual assaults. Other times, guys, he would allegedly would pretend to be a bouncer at a bar. One of the bars, I believe, was the Harp over by the Boston Garden. And he'd go in there and he'd spot women who were obviously inebriated, highly inebriated, and pretend to be a bouncer. And he looked the part. Big, stocky guy. Actually a pretty good-looking guy. And he'd play off that he was security for the bar and get these women alone, attempt to drive them home, sometimes take them home and rape them and videotape it. And this is like Boston Strangler level compulsion, I think. And if this had went on, would Alvin Campbell have graduated to homicide? I don't know. That seems to be the progression with these people. But 9 rapes. There are 2 other rapes, I believe, he is being investigated for. Well, let me be a little more precise. He is being investigated for 8 rapes, 1 potential rape, and there is 2 investigations pending where I believe there is DNA. There's DNA in a lot of these cases, and it's just crazy. And I wanted to point out an excellent article on this by Walter Wuthman, Wuthman, from WBUR Radio. And he gets pretty deep into the history of Alvin Campbell. You know, he grew up in Dorchester, but again, by the early 2000s, in and out of the joint. And then all those charges, the rapes that I just told you about. This is an excellent article. I'm going to put it in the show notes. I've actually asked Walter to come on to the show via email. I haven't heard back yet. If anybody knows him, give him a buzz and let him know Boston Confidential wants to talk to him about this case. If I hear back by next week, I'll do a part 2 on it, or maybe even later. So if anybody knows Walter at WBUR, please give him a ring and let him know that we want to speak with him. Also, there's been a big layoff at WBUR, so I don't know if he's still working there or not. So this was an excellent article, and it gets into the DNA aspect, and there's some privacy laws in Massachusetts that are designed, I believe, to keep the confidentiality of the sexual assault victims to not identify them. But this law kind of hamstrings people about identifying serial rapists because he's in several different jurisdictions at certain points and there's no a definitive database. And this is how something like this sort of falls through the cracks. And you had some victims who didn't really want to participate. And I'm going to tell you about how this came about, because it's kind of strange, and I hope it doesn't reverse itself through the judicial process, because the police, I think, on a certain level, did a good job, but on other aspects of this case, really dropped the ball. This guy should have been doing 25, 30 years just for those gun convictions alone. 2014 was his 3rd gun conviction, and he served 7 years on it. But that's just not enough. So according to Walter Wuthman, I know I'm butchering that name, but a group of girls was out, you know, on a, I think, a girls' night out, and some of them were staying locally in a hotel. And he gets them in the car, and one of the girls, there's a fight amongst the girls. He offers to drive her around the city well, she gets herself together, and that's in quotations. The woman is intoxicated, and he ends up taking the woman to his apartment in Dorchester and sexually assaulting her. Now, there is DNA, and it comes right back to Mr. Campbell because his DNA is in the system, but apparently there was no arrest. And just a few years later, the list of victims is up to 3 or 4. And again, I want to take the time to say the rape charges, the sexual assault charges, it's all alleged. He hasn't been convicted of the sex crimes yet. He is currently in jail awaiting trial for those charges, so he is presumed innocent. But he had been convicted of those firearm charges. In my opinion, he should have been in jail for much, much longer. I believe some of the issues with not charging Mr. Campbell stem from the victims because they were drunk, and a defense attorney can have a field day with that. But I believe if he was charged in this first case right away, it would have saved the subsequent victims. And now we're up to, I don't know what, 9 or 10 victims. They could have been saved from his alleged assault, you know? And it's not the first time in Boston history that a politician had a wayward or criminal brother or sister, because you can trace that all the way back to the Bulger family, where Jim Bulger, Whitey Bulger, was the head of the Irish Organized Crime Unit in Boston, and his brother, William Bulger, was Senate president for many years, very powerful. And it's kind of a strange dynamic. There are no allegations in this case with the Campbells that Andrea Campbell went out of her way to stop the prosecution of her brother. But there is some speculation that the police were reluctant to charge him because they didn't want to go up against a well-known politician. At the time of these assaults, Andrea Campbell was on the city council, and she later becomes the president, which is a very powerful position in the city of Boston. There's no direct evidence of her, you know, they call it dropping a dime to get a lighter sentence or get the police to back off. There's none of that. But if you're a detective, do you want to charge the brother of a city councilor and later the attorney general? I don't know. It puts you in a kind of a sticky wicket there. No evidence that really happened. People do speculate in that direction, though. In the article at WBUR by Walter Wuthman, he does attempt to get these answers from the Boston police, later the Medford police. But what I don't understand is they just simply refuse to answer. And I believe that comes from the fact that there really is very little media in the city of Boston. Years ago, you'd have 3, 4, 5 reporters on this, because it does look like a conflict of interest. Something happened in this case where Alvin Campbell was not arrested, and victim after victim just piled up. And how can you be an investigator, a sex crimes investigator, with the Boston police or even the Medford police, and you have to see that this is building towards a homicide? He's a stone cold serial rapist, allegedly. Again, he hasn't been convicted, but this is the way this is going. Is this all a coincidence? And you know, if you don't charge in the case before you, that he's likely to do it again, right? I mean, I don't understand that. This is allegedly a stone cold serial rapist, and they didn't seem super concerned about it. I believe some of that is, again, the women were out drunk, and it's hard to prove, but there is DNA on it. And after the second one, you'd have to come to the conclusion that this guy is allegedly some type of sexual deviant, right? But that doesn't happen. He's just allowed to sexually assault and rape women, allegedly, over and over again, and nobody breaks a sweat on it at the Boston Police Department and the Medford Police Department. Wuthman does attempt to get those answers. He asks them, and they basically give him the finger. I don't know why this story went to press without an answer from the police department. They don't really worry about this anymore because, you know, if it's not in the Boston Globe, if it's not in a Boston Globe headline, Boston Herald headline, they don't move their asses. You know, I don't understand this. This guy is allegedly raping people all over the place, and he seemingly has no intention to stop. And there's not one cop who's going to stand up. There's no prosecutor that says, okay, this is enough. I believe in some of these cases, there were problems with the victim's desire to testify. And I know it's difficult. It's a personal decision for a woman because this is the most personal thing. You've been sexually assaulted or raped, and now you have to go through this whole process where there is no certainty of punishment. It's got to be supremely difficult. I get that. But ladies, when something like this happens to you, you got to think of the person who's next in line after you. And I know it's easy for me to say, but look at this case of Alvin Campbell. He had no intentions of stopping. He didn't care what the police thought. My only real criticism of the article from WBUR is that the reporter allowed them not to respond as to why Alvin wasn't charged. Alvin Campbell wasn't charged. But there's a good timeline in this article. It'll be in the show notes. I urge you to look at it. I'm going to read from it a little bit right now. And the first one, I think I already mentioned to you guys, July 2016, an Uber ride from downtown Boston to the hotels, the group of women. This passenger ended up at Alvin Campbell's Dorchester apartment, where she alleges she was sexually assaulted, and there is DNA. So December 2016, a chauffeur from Boston filed a harassment order against Alvin Campbell after what appears to be a violent assault at Boston South Station. I don't know whatever happened to that. There's no further mention of it. The next incident reported to police was February 2017. The two roommates were at the Harp Bar in downtown Boston, close to the Boston Garden. And he ends up back at their place, where he allegedly rapes one of them and attempts to rape the other. Somehow they get him out of the apartment, and they do call the police, and there is DNA, and it comes back directly to Alvin Campbell. April 2017, there was another sexual assault. A woman complained that she was sexually assaulted outside the TD Garden, which is, you know, the Boston Garden, by Alvin Campbell. May 2017, another alleged sexual assault in Framingham. Alvin Campbell allegedly picked this woman up in a bar in Boston and drove her to her place in Framingham, where she alleges she was sexually assaulted. She did call the police and report it. In the fall of 2017, those two roommates who I just mentioned testified before a grand jury about this crazy assault. And this is where it really goes off the rails for me. The two roommates did testify at the grand jury, and for whatever reason, the prosecutors decided not to go forward. I can't believe it. I simply can't believe it. After all those sexual assaults and rapes, the prosecutors have the grand jury. I believe they got an indictment and decided not to go forward with the case. And I believe it was because the women were under the influence of alcohol. But I mean, as a prosecutor, you can't see the direction Alvin Campbell is going. I know it's difficult, but you have two witnesses there. they did testify. They're not ready to testify. They're ready to go. I don't know what it is. I can't explain it. And they won't explain it. The prosecutors won't explain it. The police won't explain why they didn't charge this guy with rape and sexual assault. It's baffling. Is it because they don't want to go up against a city councilor's brother? I don't know. They just won't answer. How do they do that? You know, they work for the people and they just give you the finger like that. And I got to say, this reporter took it. He took it a little too much. So this string of sexual assaults and rapes just continues after they had two witnesses testify at the grand jury. This is on the prosecutors. I'm sorry. In December 2017, Alvin sexually assaults, at least allegedly, a sixth woman in his SUV. Fast forward, guys, to February 2018. Another sexual assault, allegedly. Alvin Campbell picks up an inebriated woman at the Howl at the Moon Bar in Boston. And if anybody's familiar with that, it's the Dueling Pianos, and it's pretty popular. It's downtown. And somehow he gets this woman back to her place in Medford, Massachusetts, where she claims she was sexually assaulted by Alvin Campbell. Then June 2018, this is the eighth woman sexually assaulted in the SUV. And this woman also goes to the police. Again, Alvin Campbell not charged. What's going on? How come nobody with the police departments or the prosecutor's office will say, what's going on here? Obviously, at least allegedly, this guy is a serial rapist. Why isn't he charged? Why do the police and prosecutors allow other women to be victimized by this guy? Does it have something to do with his sister? I don't know. It's inexplicable to me. But I'm still not done with this timeline, guys. Hang on one second. May 2019, he was arraigned for attacking a woman. It was assault and battery, the charge. This woman was drunk and leaving, or had been drinking anyway, leaving the Tunnel nightclub in Boston. I just don't know what's happening with this guy. And September 2019, the ninth woman, guys, the ninth woman files a complaint that she was sexually assaulted at her hotel after accepting a ride from Alvin Campbell. That's nine. If you're not upset at this point, guys, you never will. You might as well shut the podcast off. November 2019, he sexually assaults a 10th woman after driving her to his place in Rhode Island from Boston. Same type of MO, allegedly. December 2019, again, alleged sexual assault, the 11th woman in his car. That's where it is alleged to have happened, and later at his apartment. That's 11 victims, allegedly. Nobody is jumping out to stop this guy, and I don't know why. And there's no law enforcement official, no prosecutor's been held accountable, no one. In January of 2020, he was arrested for the rape of the woman at the Harp Bar in downtown Boston. And guys, this is where the evidence comes from, because after his arrest for that assault and rape, the police search his phone and they come up with all these videos of these 11 women. And I think some of them may not have wanted to testify, but he videotaped himself. He allegedly videotaped himself sexually assaulting and allegedly raping these women. And that's how we found out about all of those other victims. It's absolutely crazy. This seems to be the only bit of good police work in these series of sexual assaults and rapes. That's what it seems to me. So he's arrested in 2020, and he's held at the Suffolk County Jail. And it's now 2024, and he's scheduled to go on trial December of 2024. This guy, he knows the system. He knows delay, 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 because some of these victims will get sick of it, will get sick of the process, sick of having court dates scheduled and canceled and just say, I can't do this anymore. And he fires his attorney once, twice. And it's just a mess. Man, this guy is an arch criminal who needs to be taken off the street if these allegations are true. And there's 11 of them, guys. You know what I'm saying? I have to say, it just seems like in the criminal justice world, the prosecution world, nobody gives a shit. Nobody gives a shit about this case. I've barely heard about it. I kind of stumbled upon it. And the only reason we heard about it is because he's related to the attorney general. And allegedly, this guy is victimizing women who are inebriated all over the city of Boston. And there's no Boston cop who feels aggrieved by that. There's no prosecutor who says, we have to put a stop to this. I don't get it. What's the reluctance with this guy? I just don't know. In conclusion, guys, I know I got to wrap this up. It's been a long one, but I hope these women reach down and grab some bravery. This guy has to be taken off the street. I really pray they have the bravery to come forward. And it is bravery. I get it. You can't let this guy do it again. Not one more time. All right, guys, man, that's a tough one. I'm going to come back and do a part two on this case because there's so many moving parts. There's a lot here, but I'm hoping to get the reporter from WBUR to come in for an interview, and I'd love to talk to him and see why he accepted the fact that the police department just told him no comment, basically. I mean, not one law enforcement official, patrolman, supervisor, detective has been held accountable. They had this guy at the grand jury and decided not to go forward. And he goes forward again and assaults more women. I'm vexed. I'm totally vexed on it. But I'm going to leave you here and we'll get on to the next one. There'll be a part two on this case. And man, all right, that's all I can do on this one, I think. I'll see you on the flip side, all right?